And those prices keep going up.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Welcome to the Morning Open. A look at the economy as investors start trading for the day. They've had about 20 minutes to move the markets one way or another. So we're going to ask, where's Wall Street? The happy music. S&P up about 0.6%. The NASDAQ up 0.7%. And the Dow right now ahead by 51 points, 10,503. European markets are up right now as well, anywhere from 0.5% to 1%. Asian markets closed mixed today. The Nikkei up nearly 1%, but the Hang Seng went the other way, about 1%. We got some data today that shows while Americans are paying more for energy and food, most other prices were flat or up just a little bit. The Labor Department reports a consumer price index did rise in November. Richard DeKayser is president of Woodley Park Research. He's with us live from Washington, D.C. this morning. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
So the headline is the cost of living rose 0.4% last month. Should we be nervous about that?
I don't think so. We've generally seen commodity prices, and in particular energy prices, climbing over the second half of this year. That was part of the November story. And, of course, that's real. People have to pay it when they go to the gas stations. But policymakers, and the Federal Reserve is meeting today, they tend to focus on these so-called core levels of inflation. They strip out the volatile commodities that go up and down so abruptly. And inflation there remains essentially where it's been for the past year. It's been running between 1.5% and a 2% pace, and that was continues to be the story based on essentially no change in November.
When do we start getting nervous?
Well, we'll start to get nervous once we start to see those core inflation metrics not stabilizing or going down but moving up. I don't think that's in the cards for some time, and the Federal Reserve, more importantly, doesn't think it either. In their periodic missives, they've been telling us that inflation is expected to remain low because capacity utilization, and what they're really talking about there is the high unemployment rate, creates slack and hence more supply than demand in our economy. So that day will come, but I don't see it on the horizon just yet.
And you think the interest rates will be left alone when they come through today?
That's probably the most certain aspect of the Fed's meeting today. They've been keeping the so-called federal funds rate targeted between 0 and 0.25 percentage points. They will give us lots of heads up before they make any changes there, and they haven't, so that's one you can take to the bank.
I want to quickly talk about these housing start numbers for November, up 8.9%, about what was expected. What's your assessment of the market right now, the housing market?
I think we're seeing a gradual but sustainable economic recovery in the housing sector coming on. We saw a lot of bounciness in the past couple months. I think that was heavily influenced by weather, which was extremely cold and wet in October, and reverted back to more normal conditions in November. So if you read through the kind of volatility that weather can give us, we're seeing a recovery in both sales and construction activity, which has been underway since roughly March, April of this year.
All right. Richard DeKayser from Washington. Richard, thanks.
My pleasure.
Incidentally, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke is its person, Time Magazine's Person of the Year. The magazine says he led an effort to help save the world economy. On to the UN Climate Change Conference in Copenhagen. Leaders there trying to address the issue of global warming. Marketplace reporters are there. The latest developments this morning, the Danish president of the conference resigned today to make way for Denmark's prime minister to give the negotiations a bigger political push. Outside the talks, things escalated as well as demonstrators tried to push through police barricades. Marketplace's Sam Eaton reports.
Protesters attempting to get inside the UN climate summit were beaten back with batons. They're demanding that the voices of the people most affected by climate change be heard, and they hope to take over the summit. Dave Blakeney came all the way from Canada to protest the talks.
My take is that there's a staged show of the rich countries who are really nothing but puppets from larger corporate interests who are all wrapping themselves in green.
Police held the protesters back with tear gas, and hundreds were arrested. With world leaders beginning to arrive today, Denmark has mounted its biggest security operation in history, with nearly a one-to-one ratio of police to the number of people inside the conference. In Copenhagen, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Be sure to check out Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl later today. We're going to have more coverage from the UN Summit on Climate Change in Copenhagen.
You're
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Wednesday, December 16th, 2009 at marketplace.org. The U.S. Congress is stepping up pressure on Iran to end its nuclear weapons program. Yesterday, the House passed a bill strengthening sanctions against that country. As Brett Neely reports from Washington, Congress is going after what may be Iran's Achilles heel.
Iran has huge oil reserves, but it has to import about 40% of its gasoline because it doesn't have enough refineries. California Democrat Howard Berman is the bill's sponsor.
It would sanction foreign companies that sell refined petroleum to Iran or help Iran with its own domestic refining capacity by depriving those companies of access to the United States market.
After massive protests earlier this year, sanctions expert Gary Huffbauer says Iran's government is vulnerable to economic pressure. But he says smugglers will find a way to keep Iran supplied with gasoline.
Short of blockading the Persian Gulf, the Straits of Hormuz, it will come through.
The Carnegie Endowment's Karim Sajapour says dissidents in Iran are worried about the possible new sanctions.
People believe that sanctions on gasoline are going to hit the average person and may actually pour cold water on the momentum of the opposition.
The Senate will likely take up the bill early next year. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
A big seller this holiday season is the mini laptop, but the top brand for the so-called netbook isn't Hewlett-Packard or Dell. It's Acer from Taiwan. In fact, this past quarter, Acer became the world's second biggest PC seller, just behind HP. It's a high watermark for Taiwan's tech sector, but can it go on? From Taipei, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
At a computer trade show in Taipei, Taiwan's computer makers flaunt their wares. And the leader of the pack is local brand Acer, king of the netbooks. Lawrence Lin is a company marketing executive.
So Acer, the netbook, it's like global.
The netbook plays a big role in Acer's passing Dell to become the world's second best-selling computer maker. Now we've introduced a 3D notebook and a touchscreen model.
Acer's top rival is also from Taiwan. ASUS invented the netbook in 2007. Taiwan has done well for a small island with the population of Maryland. And much of the credit goes to Acer founder Stan Shi.
Taiwanese brand name is more than 30 years.
Promoting Taiwanese brands around the world has taken 30 years, from the calculator to the computer, and now Acer has the potential to become number one worldwide.
Taiwan's recipe includes the original ingredient of cheap labor. Local firms started in the 80s by assembling PCs for foreign brands. Then, says political scientist Xu Su-Qian, they stirred in lots of engineers trained in the political and tech hub, America.
We were ally of the center of the world. We were spoiled. We were indeed spoiled.
Sprinkle in government-funded industrial parks, and you have the makings of an IT titan. But there is another titan next door. China has already sucked away factory assembly jobs. So Taiwan's challenge is to create service jobs, like designing computers and branding them. The risk is having good ideas stolen by China, where the mean joke is that R&D stands for receive and duplicate. Mark Foreman runs the Taiwan manufacturing firm Marlin & Sons.
That's like, I lend you my key, you open my door for me, you go ahead and make a copy, and then when you give me my key back, it doesn't really make a difference, does it? Because now you can open that door anytime you want.
Play China right, though, and the fastest growing market in the world equals opportunity. Skeptics will say Taiwanese companies skimp on the research and are novices at branding. But most here expect the big brands from this little island to retain their edge. In Taipei, Taiwan, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The Federal Trade Commission is suing chipmaker Intel, saying it's using its girth to extinguish competition. The suit says Intel's deprived consumers of choice and have slowed innovation in the chip industry. In Europe, regulators today dropped their antitrust case against Microsoft. That's after the company agreed to offer customers a choice of rival web browsers. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson's with us live from our bureau in New York. He's with us now. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
So how's this choice? How will this choice of browser work?
Well, all users in Europe who have Internet Explorer as their default browser on Windows will be sent an automatic update. It will give them a choice of whether they want to use Explorer or Safari or Firefox or a number of other browsers that many people probably have never even heard of.
And this will resolve the EU's antitrust concerns?
Yeah, the EU was concerned that because Windows is on 90% of the world's PCs and automatically installs Explorer, that users weren't being given a choice. As a result, the EU said a lot of websites are becoming compatible only with Internet Explorer, and that, they said, further reduces choice.
And what's Microsoft saying about this, Jeremy?
Well, it did avoid fines, so it's got to be happy about that. They say they're looking forward to building on the trust they now have with European officials. But I spoke with a man named William Page, who's a University of Florida law professor. He's been following Microsoft's antitrust problems. And he says this agreement really opens up a can of worms.
There are literally hundreds of applications that potentially could be installed free on Windows. Are we going to require an elaborate ballot screen for the choice of every application or applet that's shipped with a new operating system?
And Steve, he calls the agreement very far-reaching, says it's foreign to American antitrust law.
All right, Jeremy Hobson in New York. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
Finally, the pizza delivery business down 6%. Domino's Pizza says it's changing its recipe. New crust, tangier sauce, even the style of cheese. A taste survey of pizza places by Brand Key says Domino's came in last, tied with Chuck E. Cheese. I'm Steve Chiotakis in L.A. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.